This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I think I called on you the other day at the red carpet for the Hollywood Awards.
Really?
Yeah.
Called on me?
Yeah, I was like, Josh. And you were like, no. You asked me really good questions last
it
time.
It could have been the nail.
It might have been.
Josh. Sorry.
I like the nail polish.
Thank you.
I do, too. I didn't say I didn't. It could have been that I liked the nail polish so much that I felt a real draw toward him and had to rebel against that because I had things to do.
Or you could have just kind of said, where did you get your nail polish?
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Okay, so I'll ask the question about this.
Okay.
I'll start with the generic of how familiar were you with the story and how did you get involved with the production?
I was somewhat familiar with the story, not intimately familiar with the story. I had known who Harvey was. I knew about the Twinkie defense. I knew basically what most people know in California. I remember when Harvey died. I was 10. And Gus, I think Matt Damon was supposed to do this role, and he had some scheduling problems with Paul Greengrass, and Matt and Gus have known each other for a long time, obviously, and Sean mentioned me to Gus, and I knew Gus loosely, and they sent me the script. I read the script immediately. I cried at the end of the script. I was very moved by it. Then I got the documentary, the 1984 documentary, watched that with my daughter. Both of us were crying at the end of that. I called Gus, and I said, whatever you want to do, I'm in. And then I found out how much I was being paid, and then I was a little pissed.
You really humanized his role, though, his character, Dan White. I didn't see him as a simple villain. I saw him as someone who was really stressed out and not just simply a homophobe, and that was not just the reason why he shot him.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you have any thoughts about that yourself while you were researching.
Oh, whether
this.
He was a homophobe or not?
Yeah, because
personally, I think who cares?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that was his motive.
No.
I think that he, if you look at the relationship, especially in the beginning between he and Dan Wright, they come from, they're polar opposites. And, Dan Wright was put in that situation by the fire department, by the police department, to really bring back San Francisco and what it was founded on, this kind of white, super white Catholic mentality. And it's an impossibility. You just can't do it. I don't care what kind of politician you are, you can't do it. And the gay and lesbian movement had taken its own, life and the hippie movement and all that. So, he was given an impossible task. And also, he didn't have the foresight, he didn't have the wherewithal, and he didn't have the foresight and the political skills to realize, hey, this is happening right now. It's going to hit a peak. It will start to bleed into the mainstream, and then I'll have my time. And, to look for those opportunities. He just got more frustrated. He was the big fish in the small pond in his district. Mm-hmm. Then he was suddenly the very small fish in a huge sea of, City Hall. And he just got more frustrated. But I think he tried to do the right thing. That's when I started seeing the human. He was frustrated because he wanted more money. $9,600 a year, that's nothing. And he had the kids and the parent, the kids and the wife and all that. And then he tried to, Pier 39, he started a little chip stand where he was trying to make more money. And then he tried to resign. And then they wouldn't let him resign. Mm-hmm. They were saying, get back in there. You have to do this for us. You are the great white hope. And then Mayor Moscone wouldn't take him back in. So I understand on a very human, basic level, when all your power is taken away, and you're sitting there, and your legacy is just, it's nothing, it's dirt, with your family, with your friends, with your community, everything. And you think, the only tangible thing I can do, the only garnering of power that I have left, is to grab a gun, load the gun, point the gun, shoot the gun, kill the person, cause and effect. It's the only tangible thing I can imagine at that moment. I don't excuse it, obviously, but I understand that desperation.
He seemed like he also was feeling like an outsider. There's that great scene where he's drunk. That's one of my favorite scenes in the film, where you're drunk and you're talking to Harvey Milk outside the party, and clearly kind of upset, not at the party, and there's all these people that are in this party that have been living as outsiders their whole life, and suddenly you're the outsider in this scene.
Right.
And so you, this conservative person that should be the insider through his whole life, suddenly feels like an outsider.
Right, yeah. That scene was very simple in the way it was written. It was a scene that I'm supposed to meet with Harvey, and I give him a bottle of alcohol for his birthday, and I'm a little resentful because of his not voting on my bill. And then I was bored by the scene, and I thought, what if I drink the alcohol that I'm supposed to give to Harvey? So I kind of, we started ad-libbing on the scene, and it was an interesting scene. The way he cut it together was, but the whole homophobe thing also, like the only time I think that I reveal that even in the least is, he didn't use it, but there was a moment, I love Sean's face because his eyes went, whoa, where we were doing the scene, and finally I grabbed him and I gave him a hug. And he goes, thank you, yeah, okay, Dan, okay. And I wouldn't let go of him. And I think I'm a little stronger than Sean, so Sean was like trying to push me away, and I was grabbing onto him like that. Like that. And it was really fucking weird, man.
That would have been great, though, because he suggests.
For you or for Sean, though.
I think so, too. I think it would have been great. But, you know, Gus is the visionary.
He sees something in him that he might be struggling himself
maybe.
With sexuality.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, it is a possibility, mm-hmm. You know.
Were you jealous you didn't get a chance to kiss Sean?
Yeah. We did so afterwards.
Did you feel like you had a little more freedom with this when you were playing George W? Everybody kind of knew him. I mean, we know Dan.
Freedom with who? With W?
Yeah, with Dan, playing Dan.
Oh, playing Dan.
Because with W, everybody knows him. They're all the voice, the idiosyncrasies. Everybody
oh, for
knows
sure.
Him. You really
oh, no,
nailed
no, no, no.
them. But with this, you didn't. Were you just trying... Did you
there's hindsight, you know, so you have a little liberty, you know, in being able to interpret, even though I think I focused more with Dan White in getting down the voice and doing these things that I wanted to do, because it was a very particular time. It's only 10 months. Mm-hmm. You know, with W, it's 37 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a daunt. Even when I think about it now, I get all verklempt. That, you know, you go, how am I going to do this? Because it's not just one character. With W, you're playing 7 or 8 or 9 different characters. You're playing milestones. You're playing generations, you know. And not an easy, I can't, yeah, not an easy task.
But
I would not do it again. Much easier to play Dan White, but much tougher emotionally than Bush. You know, Bush is going through all his things, but they were always filters. He had that, you know, Bush has that great ability to have his conviction and not reassess it, not test it. Dan White was the opposite, constantly questioning his position. So that's why, I mean, in watching it, it's very satisfying to say, okay, there's a lot of colors going on there, there's a lot, but it's no fun to play. You know.
But on the other side, in the communities that knew Dan White, are they just as scrutinous of your performance as the nation might have been for W?
No, not at all. And it's funny because I was staying, let's see if I get this right, my ex-wife's brother's apartment that was overlooking the Castro. So I did all my shopping and grocery shopping in the Castro. I'd walk down the hill and I'd do my shopping. And I was afraid. You know, I knew that San Francisco had really embraced the fact that this movie was being done, and Gus and Sean and all that. But when I went down there, I felt the same way about W. You know, I talked to Oliver about maybe needing security and all that, because I didn't want some guy to be like, you know, Rush Limbaugh. You know? I was a little scared, and I went down there, and everybody who I talked to said, you're playing Dan White. And I was like, yeah. And they were like, that's so great. We're so happy you're involved and so happy you're doing this movie. So they're just, like, my initial reaction in doing the movie, it wasn't like, God, I got to play this character. With this movie, it was more, I have to be involved in this movie. It's an important film. And San Francisco felt the same way. So I've got no negativity whatsoever. No, you know. Why would you play a guy like that who's sympathetic? You know, how dare you? He was a monster.
I think it's interesting.
Because he is a monster. You already go into that with that baggage. It's like Bush. You already go in there with that baggage. Why didn't Oliver slam him more? He's already slammed, man. He's gone from 90% to 25%. More interesting question is, how did this guy become the fucking president? That's pretty interesting to me. It's a compelling story.
We were all alive in 2000. We know how it happened.
Right. I know.
What I thought was interesting was the walk that he took when he first shot the mayor, and then he had to walk all the way.
That was my idea. That was my idea because...
That was a long walk, I imagine, for him.
That was the Gus had this great shot in Elephant, following that kid forever.
Yeah.
To me, it's one of the most brilliant shots I've ever seen. And I just wanted to be involved in a shot. But I said, why? You know, it's really curious to me, or really interesting to me, because he shot Mayor Moscone, And then he walked the entirety of City Hall. It's a 3.5 minute walk, man. And we did the walk together. And I said, you got to have that shot. You got to have that shot, please.
You know,
and he used part of it. That's cool.
Your character, the emotion of it is interesting. It goes kind of like a wave going up, and then it explodes at the end.
Right.
Never comes down.
Right.
I imagine in starting as your character and then ending it, emotionally, you had to take it from, you know, down here to up here.
Uh-huh.
Each time you're, you know, each time they're shooting you, I mean, they're obviously not shooting it all at once.
Right.
How do you emotionally, you know, contain yourself to get to the next level each time you get to the next plane? Because the tension just kept building through this movie.
No, I know. You know, you just do it through, you do it, you know, through. I create graphs, you know, because I'm a day trader, so that's what works for me. You know, and I go, that's the support right now, that's resistance, that's testing the support in the story, that's going and testing resistance, it breaks resistance, then there's a major fall because of news or whatever, and that's how I do the character. And for me, I use very specific things just that I've always used, that I've come up with, that allows me to get into a state that hopefully parallels what he's going through in the story. And then sometimes it just takes a life of its own, and sometimes you get it wrong. Sometimes you allow a moment to take a life of its own and be its own entity, and then you see it in the movie and you're like, whoa, that was so the wrong direction. Whoops. You know, in this movie, you know, you just get lucky. Like what happened in the drunk scene. You know, that could have not turned out good.
Was the final shot, was that one consecutive shot where you go through the window outside and come in all the way up to the shootings?
How do you mean one consecutive shot?
Remember you went in through the window of City Hall or something?
Yeah.
So you didn't have to go through the metal detectors.
Yeah.
And is that a final sequence that took place as far as a shot goes with Gus?
Uh-huh.
Did he start shooting it there and you just kept shooting as
uh-huh.
you went along?
Uh-huh.
That was, you know, and it starts from that sequence,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. We wanted to do that whole sequence together because it was an emotional sequence and, you know, and that's what he did. You know, he came in through the window. It was that window he came in through. But yeah.
I always thought he was the most complicated character in the tragedy. I mean, were you conscious of that from the beginning, and did you find that an extra challenge? I mean, really complicated.
Emotionally complicated. Yeah. Simple, you know, as a cosmetic, you know, you see him and he's pretty simple-minded. Mm-hmm. But emotionally, you know, and that's why when people say, well, why, you know, is the guy sympathetic and all that? No, he's just human, you know? And again, not to excuse it, but it's more interesting to me to see him go through all these emotions. Like, there was the one shot toward the end before he, before the dawn, where he shoots Harvey and Mayor Moscone, and I know he intended to shoot two other people. And, you know, we did this thing on the couch where I was in my underwear, and, you know, I was naked at one point and crying on the couch, and then, but I love the way Gus did it, because you see this guy writhing. It's just emotional. It's so emotional for him, but he can't get it out. He wants to get it out, so it just turns into this kind of freaky bubble, you know, that finally manifests in the murder. But yeah, I think he's a complex character, but not, you know, mindfully, just emotionally, behaviorally.
What has this year been like for you, from No Country coming out to W and all?
Awful. I would never want to do it again. No, it's been good, man. I mean, it's been really good. What's great about it is the filmmakers. You know, the filmmakers can really, they really make a difference. And I love who these people are, because the through line, they go, what's the through line between Oliver and, you know, Gus and Coens and, you know, Woody Allen and all these people? It's because they're all nerds, man. They love they love filmmaking. They love storytelling. And I do too, you know. They're not about the ego. They're not about the status of it. They just want final cut on their movies, because they want to be totally, which I have so much respect for, they want to be totally responsible for the stories that they tell.
Have you noticed Josh Brolin becoming more of a household name?
No. No, if I was doing Heroes, maybe.
You know.
My daughters love that show.
Well, you mentioned Heroes, but you will be playing a comic book character soon. You're doing Jonah Hex, right?
No.
You're not doing Jonah Hex?
Don't know yet.
Have you had meetings with Mark and Brian?
No. Or?
Do you want to?
Don't know. Don't know. I have a very tough time deciding, except for Milk. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know, you know. It's a very good time. It's a very good time, and I don't want to slight anybody, and I don't want to insult anybody. But the fact of the matter is, you know, with more decisions comes a little more pressure, and there, it's for me, I just try and find that thing that really resonates. You know, there's one thing that Tony Scott's doing that I love and that I really want to do, and trying to find out timing and all that, I can't tell you.
Well, I was going to say that there's a lot of, the studios seem to be gearing up for major productions come February and March.
Right.
There seems to be a lot coming.
Uh-huh.
And is that the reason why you're, say, hesitant for Jonah, is that there's so much about to launch that maybe...
Not entirely. No. A little bit, because more possibilities and all that, but no. I think Jonah Hex is a really, really interesting story. I think it would be risky also, which I like. I don't know. I don't know if it's the thing to do.
And you recently, I think you recently...
Got me all fucked up.
Well, why do you have such a hard time deciding?
You
gotta
do it.
Good question. I like that.
That's good.
Because it's my process, man. It's my, it's just like when I play a character, I carry around a memo pad and I write 1,000 questions. So I like to ask myself those questions before I start a movie, so I'm not in the middle of the movie going, what did I do? I want to give myself entirely to the film and to the filmmaker when I decide to do the movie. So I would rather go through all the crap before that. And if it doesn't turn out, that's okay. That's when I don't worry about it, because I know I went into it with the right intentions. You know, I always have to weigh out, why am I going into this? Is it the characters? Is it the story? Is it the filmmakers? Does everything? Is it the other actors that I can round up? Is it greed? Is it money? Is it the fact that, you know, oh, they're offering me a lot of money? You know, yeah, that's nice. I don't get paid, man. I do the art films or whatever, you know. Character actor. Fuck that. It's a nice trajectory, and I love working with great filmmakers, like I said. You know, I would also work with a first-time filmmaker. If I see his reel, and I go, oh, my God, this guy's amazing. There's a great commercial director in London, Johnny Green. I think he's a phenomenal talent, phenomenal. So I'm trying to get together with him and create something together, because I think he's an amazing talent. I could be wrong, but I think he is. So I don't know, you know. You just got that much of my process that goes on in my head just now. This happens for months. It's exhausting.
Does it also have to do with the fact that some comic book
really
movies could be totally great, like The Dark Knight, and then you could also have like Fantastic Four, which is total crap?
I think it's all good. It doesn't, you know, there's no genre that's off limits to me. I would love to be able to go through all genres. To me, it's not the genre. It's like, oh, Transformers is a piece of shit because it's this, that, that. It's not necessarily. It is what it is. It might not be right for me, but, you know, I love action movies. I love all kinds of movies. I don't just want to do, oh, this has to be, it's so precious, it's so, you know. But I don't want to do a movie. I'll give you an example, and I'll say it, Hollow Man. To me, Hollow Man is an interesting concept. You know, given no consequence, do we veer toward the good or the evil? What is, you know, what do would you naturally lean toward? That's an interesting question to me. How it manifested, I could care less. I watched that movie and I'm like, I don't care. I just don't care. And Paul Verhoeven, to me, that's going into it with good intentions, because he's done some amazing films. You know, Soldier of Orange, Fourth Man, Spetters, and he just did an amazing film recently. So that's what I mean, going into it with good intentions. Sometimes it plays out and sometimes it doesn't.
Is there any theater on your agenda?
Yeah. I mean, we have a theater company here, and we're in Los Angeles, right? Trampart Theater Club. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about going back to New York possibly in the next year, maybe.
Speaking of New York, you recently hosted Saturday Night Live?
Mm-hmm.
So what was that experience like?
It was hard, man. It was hard.
Well, you talk about your process, getting ready for things, and that's just a chaotic.
I didn't have much of a process.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think part of it was, I mean, it was a lot of fun, and they're amazing. I mean, they're a lot of fun. And I hadn't watched the show a lot, so, you know, I didn't know a lot of what was going on. But, I think they didn't know what to do with me, because, you know, I do all these heavy movies recently, and it's, if I went back, I think it would be twice as fun.
Did you have a favorite skit that you did, or a favorite?
Oh, the Dirk Dick and Duncan Dirt or whatever, the Susie Orman show. That was pretty fun. And I liked the country thing, I'm No Angel, with Amy Poehler. She was funny. I had fun doing it. It's ridiculous.
Growing up with your dad, he's a 70s actor. Mm-hmm. You've been compared to 70s, a lot of 70s actors.
No, I've just done a lot of movies that take place in the 70s.
but even the way you look, the way you act,
the stash.
Yeah, right. And do you have any 70s films? Do you think that is like one of the last golden ages of cinema?
No.
Because I know a lot of actors and directors that talk about the 70s would agree with you, because people like to say that was the last, because all these
people
great
like to say that. They were great actors and great
and
filmmakers
great
and great movies. And, a lot of my favorite films, but there's other films, I mean, a different, Dog Day Afternoon, French Connection, uh-huh. French Connection 2, actually. Amazing.
Great movie, Frank.
And so, but there's a lot of great movies coming out now, Yeah. There's a lot of independent films now remind people of the 70s because films cost less in the 70s,
right.
So therefore it has a similar look. This whole thing about going back to the 70s and just living in hindsight, I think, is wrong. Because there's so many stories to be able to twist and mix up. And, Milk is a perfect example. You take, Gus, and he can do, oh man, what's wrong with my brain?
It's really early?
I guess. I'm sick too. He can do, what the fuck is a movie with Matt Damon? It's
Goodwill
Hunting, and then he can do Paranoid Park. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I love about Gus. He keeps mixing it up. How can I tell the story differently? How can I tell, what does this story call for? This is a great mix. This is somehow, I don't know how you guys feel, but I watched this movie, and I love this film. I love the film. So it's one of those things. Flirting with Disaster was one of those things that I watched the film and I go, thank God I'm in this film. I love this film. I love what it represents. I love what it's about. I love how absurd it is. I love how off it is. And to me, Gus was so sensitive to the story. And yet you see a mainstream, very solid, skillful filmmaker who's throwing in his experimental whatevers, anyway.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
thanks,
you.
Guys.
Speaking
thank
for
you.
Fandom, Jonah Hex.
Jonah Hex. Really?
For real.
Just so you know, I thought the movie was excellent. So.
You thought what?
No, it was excellent.
Oh, good.
So
thanks, man. Hey, let me ask you guys a question.
All right.
What do you think? What did you think of Crank?
Neville Dean Taylor are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. They are just great. And I want to see you in that. I just want to see you in that universe because they're
Why
out of their mind.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Because they just do shit that nobody.
Exactly.
He films on rollerblades.
Yeah.
He films on rollerblades.
Yeah.
It's like the shots that they get are crazy.
Turn off your